Okay, so welcome to Parshas Truma, the Meshech Chochma. We have a number of pieces tonight that speak about the Aron specifically. It's obviously the Parsha of the Mishkan, and there are a couple of pieces in the Meshech Chochma that talk about the idea of the Aron. So if you take a look on page Kuf Lamed Beis, so Kuf Lamed Beis, the left-hand column, about halfway down, the Asu Aron Atzei Shittim. So the Meshech Chochma comments as follows: Hinei ba'aron lo nustavu al zahav tor rak aron v'kaparas, aval azer v'habadim imki lo yosur v'menu einon rak zahav lo tahor. We find that the Aron was made of gold, but when it comes to the various different parts of the Aron, we find that sometimes the term Zahav Tahar, pure gold, is used. That's in regard to the Aron itself and to the Kaparis, to the piece which was on top of the Aron, which had the Kruvim. Those are described as having to be made out of Zahav Tahar, out of pure gold. In contrast, the Zer, the crown, which was on top of the Aron, and the Babim, the rods, the poles, which were inserted into the sides of the Aron, those are described as being made from Zahav, from gold, but not from Zahav Tahar, not from pure gold. What's the difference? So he writes as follows: V'hu ki atahar hu achnasa l'kur l'tzarfan ki mufarsh v'yishalmi d'shkal imperik bav halach gimel. What does it mean that the Zahav was Tahar, that it was pure gold? Right, so it doesn't mean pure gold as opposed to being mixed with other metals. What it means is that the gold was purified through putting it into a smelting process, which would take out any of the dross, any of the impurities, which were part of the gold. The nimsa the hachnasa lakur hukumo ibud ba'or. It writes as follows: in a sense, the process of subjecting the gold to purification, to smelting the gold, is somewhat parallel to the notion of ibud, of tanning the skin, which we find, we're going to see in a moment, which we find with regard to the tefillin. And he writes as follows: Wachen ha'aron atzva hu kama or ha'klaf shekospin alav tefillin shetzarech ibud l'shma aval azer zav v'habadim hema ka'or ha'batim. Right? Says as follows: when you look in the halachas of tefillin, we know that tefillin primarily have two elements to them, both made out of leather. There's the klaf, there's the parchment upon which the writing of the tefillin obviously takes place, and then the batim themselves, the boxes, the compartments, are made of leather. The or of the klaf, the parchment upon which the writing takes place, requires something called ibud. It has to be tanned and processed, and that ibud has to be done lishma. It has to be done for the sake of the mitzvah of tefillin. In contrast, the or habatim, the leather which is made into the boxes, into the compartments for the tefillin, that may or may not require ibud lishma. The position of the Rambam is that it doesn't really require ibud altogether. And ibud is the sort of thing which makes, transforms the leather into parchment and makes it easier to write on. Obviously, the leather of the tefillin themselves, it doesn't have to, on the bottom, it doesn't have to have writing done on it. So says the Rambam, there's not really a necessity for ibud, for that further processing of the tefillin. Shulchan Aruch, interestingly enough, Shulchan Aruch, we do say that l'chatchila, the or habatim, the leather of the outside of the tefillin, does require ibud, does have to be tanned and processed. However, Shulchan Aruch says that if it's difficult for whatever reason to do ibud on the or habatim, then one can rely, if necessary, on the Shita Sarambam, that it's not necessary. What's the comparison? So basically he's building a very, very fascinating comparison over here between the tefillin and the aron. Just as when we look at the tefillin, the fundamental, essential part of the tefillin, the klaf, has to be processed and purified in a very, very intensive fashion. You need ibud lishma. The outer, less essential, I mean, relatively speaking, the less essential portions of the tefillin, the leather boxes which house the klaf, those don't need the same degree of processing. They may not need the ibud lishma which the klaf requires. Says Meshech Chachma, we find a similar thing with regard to the aron. In other words, the aron itself and the kaporis apparently are the equivalent of the klaf. They are the essential parts of the aron. The zer, the crown, and the babin, the rods, those are kind of like one degree removed. They're somewhat more external. They don't require the same degree of processing, hence the requirement for zahav tahor, for very purified and processed gold, is only for the inner part, right? The less essential, again, relatively speaking, the less essential, the more external elements of the aron require zahav, but they don't require zahav tahor, right? So very, you can take this homiletically and, apply it to...
The inside of the book,
right,
and the word, and the inside
of
the tzitzit that you write on, right, also,
right,
the
right,
outside, doesn't require the
tzitzit,
right, as much as the inside.
Right. I mean, you can apply this homiletically. It's interesting, grist for Rabbanim, let's say, Lamarshal, because, basically the idea which the Meshech Chachma is saying is common to both Tefillin and the Aron, is that even within Kedusha, even within the Kedusha of one object, there are different levels, and different levels of purity are required the closer you go to the essence of a particular idea. Right. In other words, you might have said as follows, and this would have been very reasonable. The klaf is really the luchos, right? The aron is the batim. The batim are the ritzuos, right? You might have taken it, one step out. I guess it's just because of the intense kedusha of the aron that center piece, that thing which requires, the greater degree of tahara, the greater degree of preparation, is even more extensive than what we find by the tefillin. Right? So that's so then he writes, Lochein lo yefsarech lehatichon l'shem aron ha'edus. Right, so therefore he says that the requirement of, so to speak, of smelting altogether, and certainly smelting lishma, was only a requirement of the gold that was part of the aron and part of the kaparas, not the gold that was part of the badim and part of the zer. Vakruvim lohayiv sarich lichtov sheim shal zavtar, kem she miksha mikuf hakaparas, hakaparas haya zavtar. Im kein... Gam hakruvim hem zahavtar, right? Kmoshe kasev Rambam, and he gives you a reference to Hilchos Beis HaBechira. The kruvim, being part of the kaparis, were also made of zahav tahar, and as per this distinction that he's drawing. Yes. Yeah. Ibud lishma by the klaf or by the batim. Right, so I mean, the shaila would be within those rishonim who argue on the ram, they require ibud lishma by the orah batim as well as the orah klaf. Is there any basis for distinguishing that there's one is more essential, one is less essential? That I don't know. Right, but certainly within the shittas of Rambam, it doesn't require the ibud lishma b'chlal by the orah batim. So certainly this double madrega would apply. Okay, so that's an interesting aura he has just with regard even to the gold within the aura. The madregas, the different levels within the aura, as to what type of gold is necessary. The next piece, which is two paragraphs long, is two fascinating explanations which he gives as to a halacha, one of the mitzvahs, which is in this week's parasha. V'tabeos ha'aron yiyu abadim, the very next paragraph, lo yosiru mimenu. The rods, which we just made reference to a moment ago, the badim, are supposed to be stuck in the rings that are on the side of the aron, and the badim are never supposed to be removed from those rings. Very counterintuitive. I mean, you would think that, the aron is the aron, The rods get stuck into the rings when you need to carry the aron. And when you don't need to carry the aron, so you take the rods out. You know what I mean? Why do they need to be? No, you're not allowed to remove the baden from the aron. And indeed, this is counted as a mitzvah lo sase. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs. Ad kidei kach, the amru chazal, ha-mesir badei aron loka. Right? The chazal say that a person would get malchus, right? He's subject to a penalty, right? It's a lot if he removes the badim from the aron. If he didn't mizbech, if he will badim to say so, b'chein b'shulchan, that's not true when it comes to the other kelim, by the mizbeach and by the shulchan. The badim serve a purely pragmatic role. They serve to enable the people to carry the mizbeach and the shulchan when they're being carried from place to place. And hence, they can be removed when they're not in use. Masha'en came ba'aron, ha'badim kvum ba'tomit, ha'lodoverhu. What's pshat that these badim are left constantly in the aron? The aron's sitting there for years and years and years, and the badim are not allowed to be removed. Right? Obviously the badim by the aron don't simply serve a pragmatic purpose. There's obviously something hashkafic, or something, symbolically significant, by virtue of the fact that the badim can't be removed. So he's going to quote one pshat from the Alshich HaKodesh, and then he's going to give his own. V'nira al-pi medrash, she'aron romeis l'keser Torah, shumunach l'chol arotz elikach. Right? The aron, as the Midrashim wax eloquent, is a reference to the keser Torah, to the crown of Torah, which is open to everyone. Right? Aron, has the luchos in it, represents Torah. A Talmud Chacham who's sitting and learning often needs financial support from others in order to ensure that he can, continue learning. Right? If I could broaden it a little bit, and don't worry, there's not going to be an appeal, but a Torah institution requires financial support from people in order that it be solvent. V'chein amru chazal gam al ha'aron b'yum adaf ayin beis, beis k'siv v'osisa, mikan l'tamil chacham shatsiba mitzuvim lasos malo melachto. Right? Chazal say a similar idea that even the making of the aron hints at the idea that Talmud Chacham is supposed to support, that it is supposed to be supported by others. Others have the obligation, even if they're not learning, to be machzik Talmud Torah. For zebo habadim shela olam habadim heim hamachzikim ba heim hasomchim yedei haTalmud Chacham shu haaron leedus Hashem etorosof. So says the Meshech Chachma, the badim's significance is to be symbolic of those who support Torah. Because after all, what are the badim? The badim are those things which would be used to hold the aron up. So just as the aron, which represents Torah, needs constantly support, so too the Talmud Chacham, who in his own life, we hope, represents the ideals of the aron, he also needs his badim. He needs those people who are going to support him financially as he learns. Oh, okay, so very good. He's going to use the Aron Nosius Nosov in the next piece, where he's going to say his own pshat in the Badin. But if you want to combine it over here, you could say as follows. The Gemara says, as we're going to see in just a moment, Aron Nosius Nosov, the Aron had this supernatural property. You didn't really have to carry the Aron. The Aron, picked up. It could fly. The Chazal say that the Aron basically flew across the Yarden when the Jews came into Eretz Israel, and the Aron was capable of holding those who thought that they were holding it. So metaphorically, perhaps that refers to the idea when people support the Talmud Chacham, they think they're supporting him. In reality, perhaps it's his Torah which is supporting them. In other words, he's doing them a bigger favor than they're actually doing to him. But in any case, so he said, the badim represent those who are machzik Torah, who support Torah, and they are constantly together with the Talmud Chacham. Umei haroi shiutamid ochzim ba'aron abris layosir mimenu. So those who support Torah should be eternally connected to Torah. You know, if you sever the supporters from the Torah, so that's a terrible symbolism, you know, to terrible message to send to people. Right? In other words, okay, not everyone's able to learn or to teach or whatever, but, you know, there's certainly a demand upon people that they should support the ideals of Torah. Right? The symbolism of the Badin being eternally stuck into the Aron is there is this inseparable relationship between those who learn Torah and those who support Torah. Masasi ba'alshech. Right? So if you say Masasi ba'alshech, so why is he putting it in the Meshech Chachma? Yes, the Alshech Sefer was not so readily available, the Meshech Chachma is saying, I like this Alshech very much, and I just want to spread it around, you know, even for those of you who may not be learning Alshech HaKadosh on our Torah. Right, that could be right, you know, so... Umasasi. Afterwards...
Came up with the idea
of could be. Yeah, very good. Yalderach and you can say it's the following idea as well, which Alderach HaMusko is a more, I don't want to say intellectual approach or whatnot, but, you know, more philosophical approach. Let's maybe put it that way. Hinei noda shitas haramdam. Tzarech lahad mekaneros gam bayom. Shizeu bichlal hatovas haneros ledideh. Is the Machlokas Rishonim, do the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash burn during the daytime or not? The Rambam's position is that the menorah was burning constantly. You know, other Rishonim learn that the menorah was lit every evening and burned into the morning, and in the morning they would do something called Hatovas Haneros, which most Rishonim understand means they would clean out the receptacles in the menorah that held the oil. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam holds that they would light it at night, and then, after it burned out in the morning, they would relight it, and it would stay lit, you know, during the course of the day. V'shitaso muskelas. I think the word muskelas over here means it makes sense. I think that's what he means. Says the Meshech Chachma, I hear the reasoning of the Rambam. D'kmosha amu razal v'chila oroch utzarech, u'laharos kihu ein tzarech lehoir, rak shezeh chok dosi, hutzarech lahadlik gam bayom. Kimosha had loka bayom enu lehoir, kein had loka balayla, shilishtein inyonechot. Says the Meshech Chachma, the position of the Rambam that the menorah has to be lit during the day is to convey the following idea. The purpose of lighting the menorah is not to provide light. Because, Mela, if you light it at night and only at night, so one might walk away with the impression that the purpose of the menorah is to light up the Beis HaMikdash at night, or, you know, to light up the Kodesh at night. And therefore, there's no reason to burn it during the day when it's light already. But since the purpose of the menorah is to be symbolic, it's not to actually provide light, as Chazal say, the Chila Orah Hutzach, what, the Ribon Shel Olam, he needs a lamp on in the Kodesh, you know, so he can find his way around. There's no real pragmatic need for the lighting of the menorah. The lighting of the menorah is a mitzvah, right? It's chok dosi. It's a religious idea. Whatever the lighting of the menorah is supposed to convey, it's not just a pragmatic way of keeping the lights on in the Kodesh. Mimela, says the Rambam. So, of course, you would keep the menorah on during the day. And in fact, you know, it's perhaps even more significant that you light the menorah during the day, because lighting the menorah during the day conveys that this is not about a pragmatic need to keep the menorah lit. This is about the symbolism of menorah. The menorah represents Torah and the, you know, spreading of Torah near and far. So that idea is applicable during the day as well. What's that? Meaning that the natural light didn't come in.
Right.
So, you know, so you could argue like that, you know, Taki, you do need it during the day too. Right, but he's saying, look, I mean, who's coming into the Kodesh? Right, no, it's not like, well, I guess you have the Mizrach HaKtaris, right? You know, so you have the Mizrach HaKtaris. Okay, but, Well, yeah, the Shulchan is Midei Shabbos to Shabbat. Okay, so you know, you have the Ketaris is every day. The Shulchan is from Shabbos to Shabbos. Yeah, I hear. Okay. I mean, you do have the door open. you know, so there was some light, I guess, that was coming in from there, right? Right? Fire from the Mizbeach, right? Yeah, but the fire from the Mizbeach, well, fire from the Mizbeach HaKdoros. Right? Right, okay, I hear. But, Al Koponim, you know, he's saying, chatting around on this, you know, to davka light it during the day, because ordinarily, you know, a light would not be necessary during the day. I would think that just from the opening, from the Pesach, there would be some light that would come in that way. So Kein Ha'aron Shunosa Yis Nosaf, right? So this is the idea which we mentioned before. The Gemara in Sota says that the Aron is Nosa Yis Nosaf. The Aron would carry those who thought they were carrying it. The Ein Abadim will say so. Shunosa Yis Atzma. So the truth is, the Badim were not really necessary. Because if the Aron was carrying itself, so you don't need Badim. You only need Badim if you're actually carrying it. But if the Aron carries itself, so the Badim are really extraneous. Ki hu mishkan kavod hanosei olamim. The Aron represents that power which carries the worlds themselves. It certainly doesn't need to be carried by human beings. V'lochein sivo ki habadim bal yosuru mimenu. That's why, a second reason, that the Badim are not supposed to be removed from the Aron. Lahoros kemosha ein inyan lahabadim be'esa yosu murach ba'ol el moed, kacho b'shor shenosim asol ha'kosef, ein ze inyan ha'nitzrach lahakovur ha'nosu kivyocho. Right? When the Aron is sitting there in the ol moed, in the Kodesh HaKodoshim, and the Badim are there, the Badim clearly serve no purpose. So by extension, when the people are carrying the Aron, the message is, the Badim don't serve any purpose then either. The same way that the menorah lit during the day serves no practical purpose. It's only to show you that when it's lit at night, it doesn't serve any purpose either. The leaving of the Badim in the Aron constantly is to show you, these are not pragmatic. They have no practical need or function. It's a way of conveying the idea, she'aron nosei yis nosaf. And the truth is, if you think about it, for most of the history that the Aron was part of Klal Yisrael's life, they did not really have the opportunity to experience she'aron nosei yis nosaf, because the Aron was mostly stationary. Right? So how do you convey that idea, that ha'aron nosei yis nosaf? Is there any way to convey that idea, you know, without actually moving the Aron around? So Meshech Chachma's argument is, the very leaving of the Badim in the Aron, you know, is a way of perpetually conveying the idea that the Aron doesn't need the Badim. The Badim serve a purely, you know, symbolic or ornamental function when it's stationary. And that's the same way that they serve a purely ornamental or, you know, symbolic function when the Aron is actually being moved. Right? So there is this parallelism between the constant burning of the lights of the menorah together with the constancy of the Badim in the Aron. One more piece about the Aron, right? The next piece. V'yala Aron titan asa'idus asher et'etene lecha. Now, the Meshech Chacham is going to bring our attention to the fact that it actually says twice in Parshas Truma that you have to put the luchos into the Aron. Right? If you take a look in the Chumash, Perek Chotei Pasuk Tes Zayin. Right, we just read the Tabe Osa Aron Yiu Abadim Lo Yasurim Imenu. And then the pasuk says, "V'nasafa el ha'aron es ha'edus asher etenei lecha." You should place into the Aron the edus and the luchos which I have given you. Then it talks about the kapores, and then again, pasuk chafalev, "V'nasafa et kapores al ha'aron milamola." You should place the kapores on top of the Aron. "V'al ha'aron titen es ha'edus asher etenei lecha." And into the Aron you'll put the edus, the luchos, which I am giving to you. And of course, the question is, we knew that already, right? As we knew that back a couple of psukim ago. So, what, we forgot, right? So, what is the point of repeating this idea twice? So, the Meshech Chachma takes this repetition and uses it to answer a very, very basic question about the Aron and gives us some insight into the role that the Aron played. Hinei ka'akelim asu b'mikdash sheni levad ha'ara. Ki haluchos nignazu v'haluchos me'akvim ha'ara. All of the kelim that were in the first Beis HaMikdash were also in the second Beis HaMikdash, with the exception of the Aram. Why was there no Aram in the second Beis HaMikdash? Because they didn't have the Luchos. Right? The Luchos, which had been in the first Aram, was Nignas, it was hidden away in an underground cavern during the reign of Yoshiyahu HaMelech at the end of the first Beis HaMikdash period. So, you know, since they did not have the Luchos, you know, they couldn't scan and copy the Luchos, you know, for the second Beis HaMikdash. There were no Luchos in the second Beis HaMikdash, so the main law, they didn't have an Aram. Now, Lachari, you could ask the following question. Good, so they didn't have the Luchos. The Luchos are hidden away underneath the Beis HaMikdash, you know, in this underground chamber. So make an Aram, a second Aram, and don't have the Luchos. Right? Why would the failure to have Luchos prevent them from making another Aram? I mean, Moshe Lamad Avidonis. So we find that the second Beis HaMikdash was lacking in the Urim V'Tumim, you know, the special Shemos, which were placed into the folds of the Choshen. Right? But the Pashta seems to be that the Kohen Gadol did have a Choshen. He had a Choshen Mishpah during the second Beis HaMikdash. It was just that the Urim V'Tumim, those Shemos which were placed into the fold of the Choshen Mishpah, which enabled people to consult the Choshen Mishpah as a kind of oracle, that was lacking. Alright, so they don't have the Urim V'Tumim, but they did make a Choshen. Right? So by way of analogy, why can't you make an Aram? Without the Luchos, so at least this way you'll have something, you have something sitting there in the Kodesh HaKodoshim. So he says, no. Haluch. I'm sorry?
Did he have the
same on the Kodesh? I don't know. The Gemara says that was one of the five things. It says, the Pasuk in Chagai, the Erza Bavi Kavada, that, you know, when the second Beis HaMikdash will be built, Ikavada, I will be honored through the second Beis HaMikdash. Ikavada is written without the hay, right? It's read Ikavada with the hay, it's written without the hay. So Chazal Darshan, there were five things that were missing from the second Beis HaMikdash, among them the Aron and the Urim V'Tumim. I guess they just, maybe they didn't know, or maybe they had a revelation that the Urim V'Tumim were not meant, you know, for the second Beis HaMikdash. So Akoponim, he writes, Haluchos Ma'akim Ha'aram. You should know that we see here in these psukim that there's no such thing as an Aron without Luchos. The presence or absence of the Luchos is a make it or break it, you know, for the Aron. You can't have an Aron without Luchos. How do we know that? Because Uvikavshim Komakom Shishina Akosuv La'akiv V'lochein Tano Beikra V'eino Aron Ashiyutan Bo Ha'edus. There's a concept in Kodshim, in fact, you're always doing Kodshim now. There's a concept in Kodshim that Shonabo Akosuv La'akev. Whenever a mitzvah is repeated by the Torah, it's to tell you that this requirement is an absolute requirement. The failure to do this will be ma'akev, will hold back the proper performance of the mitzvah. So, although the Gemara doesn't apply it to the case of the Aram, the Meshech Chachma is saying that's pshat in the double mention of placing the Luchos into the Aram. Again, we had in the space of a couple of psukim that idea mentioned twice. Put the Luchos, Why'd you mention it twice? So says the Meshech Chachma, this is an example of Shana Allah HaKosuv La'akiv. This is an example of that idea we have throughout Kodshim. If something is mentioned twice in the Chumash, it's a sign that it's essential. So the presence of the Luchos in the Aron is essential. You can't have an Aron without Luchos, as demonstrated by over here.
This is considered
Kodesh. I'm sorry?
This is considered Kodesh.
Yeah, in other words, because it's the Beis HaMikdash, right, or the Mishkan, you know, as the case may be. Yeah, but I don't think that's such a big stretch, right, at least it's you know, the Rambam.
I remember when I just said Shwet Tzavri, compare the Rambam to Ramban.
Talk about the role of the Aron in the Beis HaMikdash. Right, the Rambam doesn't really talk much about the Aron Hilchos Beis HaBechira, right? So it seems like it's not as central to the Beis HaMikdash. It's maybe like a separate kind of thing. The truth is that fits in. I mean, it doesn't. It's not a hechrus, but it fits in with the idea of the Meshech Chochma. The Rambam seems to have a notion that the Beis HaBechira, that the Beis HaMikdash is one thing, and the Aron is not really one of the Kalim of the Mikdash. I mean, the Rambam very conspicuously, when he lists the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, omits any reference to the Aron. The Aron only is mentioned in Hilchos Beis HaBechira in a kind of backhanded fashion. So the Brisker Rav writes in some of his Chidushim on the Rambam that the Aron really had a dual role. I mean, it was part of the Beis HaMikdash, but it also carried the Luchos even outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Witness, and this actually this does fit in with the Meshech Chachma, witness the fact, says the Brisker Rav, that when the Luchos Shnios are given to Moshe Rabbeinu, the first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him is, Yosif Elecha Aron Eitz, you need an Aron into which to put these Luchos. Even before the rest of the Mishkan is built, but you can't have Luchos without an Aron. Right? You can't have freestanding Luchos. The Luchos needs something, a repository, to place the Luchos in. The Meshech Chachma is kind of saying the flip side of that. Luchos need the Aron, but the Aron also needs Luchos, right? In other words, if the role of the Aron is to be a repository for the Luchos, there's just no point in there being an Aron without the presence of the Luchos. So the truth is that Rambam, that Brisker Rav, you know, fits, I think, nicely. You don't have to put them together, but it fits nicely into the idea which the Meshech Chachma is bringing out, i.e. that the role of the Aron is to house the Luchos, and Aron without Luchos is just silly. It doesn't serve any function. You know, there is no function that the Aron has without the Luchos, right? So that might fit in again with the Rambam's idea that the Aron is not really part of the, you know, part of the Klei HaMikdash, because if it was part of Klei HaMikdash, you should have to have it during the second Beis HaMikdash, even in the absence of the Luchos. Right, so that's what he writes. V'kivan shebimikdash sheni lo hayu baluchos lo hayu Aron. Since the second Beis HaMikdash, there were no Luchos, there was no Aron either. The Yafek Kosav HaRamban Shenishbar HaAron Tzarech La'asoso Mechadosh Shekol Zman Sheyesh Luchos Hu Mitzvah Saseh L'Doros. The Ramban writes that, you know, that the Rambam doesn't count making the Aron as one of the mitzvahs, because it was a one-time mitzvah. The Rambam writes that he's only going to count mitzvahs which are ledoros, which have eternal applicability. The making of the Aron was a one-shot deal. In other words, you made it and then you had it. Says the Rambam, no, you have to count making the Aron as a separate mitzvah because it is ledoros. If we were to have luchos and the Aron were to break, we would have an obligation right now to go out and, you know, make an Aron to house the luchos. Again, because the role of the Aron is to be a repository for the luchos.
Is that in light of the first thing that we were discussing about the Bagim and the Aron and the Luchos, this makes it sound like the Aron is much more of a secondary type thing too. It's all about the Luchos, and we have to put the Luchos on first, so we're going to have the Aron as my answers, whatever. Whereas before, when we were talking about it, comparing it to the Tefillin, it was much more of a...
much more central.
Yeah.
Right, so I think you can still fit the two of them together, which presumably you have to, because Meshech Chochma wrote them a column apart, you know, I mean, didn't forget from one column to the next. But once the Luchos are in the Aron, which, again, is the way it has to be, you can't have an Aron without Luchos, the Luchos and the Aron that surrounds it all becomes one unit. Right? In other words, Adarabba, the fact that the Luchos and the Aron are so intertwined with one another is not because the Aron is a secondary thing, which is just, yeah, it's just there to house the Luchos. The whole thing becomes one unit. The Aron plus Luchos becomes one single unit, which all has to have, you know, the Tachlis HaTahara, the highest level of purity, because it all becomes kind of like the klaf, you know, upon which the writing of the Tefillin takes place. Meaning?
You have an Aron without Luchos. Luchos are not. So if you have Luchos without an Aron, according to the Ramban, you have to
make an Aron.
Right. So
why do you say it's only not in one direction? I think that means they're interdependent. Right? You can't have luchos without an aron. You can't have an aron without luchos. I'm sorry? According to who? No, the Ramban is saying fakir. If the aron were to break, right? Right. No, but
once I have
luchos,
that's the only thing that decides in and off.
Right. No, but I'm saying adarabba. That shows their interdependence. You can't have luchos without an aron. You can't have an aron without luchos. The way I would describe that is that you can't maintain luchos without an aron. It's in Senes Hamon. No, that's not an essential part of the aron. Did not happen in the second Beis Hamikdash, yeah. Yeah, right. So then he makes another interesting point. Again, talking about the things that were adjacent to or next to the Aron. If you look at the Pasuk in Pasuk Chafei, Parak Chafei rather, Pesukim Chaf Aleph Chaf Beis, says as follows. Again, we just read part of it. V'nosafa sakaporet al ha'aron milamola. You should place the kaporis on top of the aron. The aron kiten esoedus asher etanin lecha, and then place into the aron the luchos. You know, arati luchosham, I will make myself available to you there. V'dibarti tchomi ala kaporis v'ben shnei akrubim asher al aron ha'edus, and I'll speak to you, says the Ribbono Shel Shalom, from on top of the kaporis between the two krubim, which is on top of the aron. Eitz kol asher atzaveus kol b'nei Yisrael. All that I will command you to Bnei Yisrael. So the simple pshat of the pasuk is that last phrase, Eitz kol asher atzaveus kol Bnei Yisrael, right? Everything that I will command you to Klal Yisrael means that's describing the content of what God is going to tell the Jewish people. Midein shnei akruvim. God is going to come when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to reveal Himself to the Jewish people. The dibur, the word of God, will come between the kruvim. And that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu will teach the Torah to Klal Yisrael. That's the simple pshat in the Pasuk. Hashem Chachma says there's another way to read the Pasuk. V'yitochein ki akosu sh'achar zev no'alti b'chosham humaymer ha'muska. It's possible to read the Pasuk such that Chaf Beis v'no'alti b'chosham up until the Asnachta, that's the first half of that Pasuk, is all a maymer ha'muska. It's a parenthetical remark. And the Al Ha'aron Titein Asaidus Asher Etanei Lecha. I'm sorry. The Eitz Kol Asher Asaveh Oscha Husiim Hamayma. And the last phrase in Chaf Beis, Eitz Kol Asher Asaveh Oscha Bnei Yisrael. Everything which I will teach the Jewish people is going back. It's not referring to that which God will say. Mibein Shnei Akruvim. It's going back to the previous pasuk. You should place in the Aron the Eidus, and also place in the Aron everything which I am going to tell Klal Yisrael. And the way to read the pasuk then would be V'el ha'aron titen esoedus asher etenei lecha Eis kol asher atzaveh oscha b'nei Yisrael. Right? Place in the aron the luchos, but also place in the aron everything which I am going to teach the Jewish people, namely shekol ha'sefer Torah yitein ba'aron o mitzad ha'aron. Right? That last phrase Eitz Kol Asher Asaveh Oscha B'nei Yisrael is a reference to the Sefer Torah, which was placed either in or next to the Aron, right? So in other words, the Pasuk reads, place in the Aron the Luchos, and also the totality of what I'm going to command Klal Yisrael. In other words, right here in Parashas Truma, the Ribbono Shel Olam is already being meramez, he's already hinting at what's going to be mentioned at the end of Chumash, that the Sefer Torah is going to be placed, there's going to be a Sefer Torah placed in or next to the Aron. That idea is already being hinted here in Parshas Truma. Okay, so again, an interesting little twist just on reading that particular pasuk.
What's the end of that pasuk?
Called an Esau. It's the end of pasuk Chaf Beis. No, just Ace. Right. So he's sticking it above essentially, right? Or actually, he doesn't. He doesn't stick in the vav the way we have it. In other words, it's clarifying what pshat and edus is. Now let's put the Eidus in, colon, Eis Kosher, Saber Eschol Ben Yisrael. The Eidus is, the identity of the Eidus is everything which I am going to teach Klal Yisrael. In other words, the entire Torah has to be inserted into or next to the Ara. Well, that's the Machlokas he quotes over here. He quotes over here from Baba Basra, you know, that there are different opinions in Chazal as to where the Sefer Torah was placed. I mean, if you look in the Pasuk in Vayelech, it says, well, Kolach is Sefer HaTorah Zev V'Samto, so Mitzad Aron, what's it, Mitzad Aron V'Bris HaKodesh, I think that's the Lashon. Right, Parshas Vayelech in Dvarim, Lamed Aleph Chafei, Vayitzav Moshe Salavim, Nosei Aron Bris Hashem Leimor, Lo Kol Ach HaSefer HaTorah Azeh, V'samtem Oso Mitzad Aron Bris Hashem Elokeichem, V'ho Yishov Shom B'chol Le'ei. Right, and Rashi over here quotes, Mitzad Aron Bris Hashem, Nechle Kukol Chach Me'isof Bob Adatra, Yesh Ve'em Omrim Dach HaYobolet Min Ha'orom Yibachutz V'shom HaYom Unach, that there was a ledge that was coming off of the Ara when the Sefer Torah was placed. Yesho Mitzad Aruch HaTayim Unach B'soch Ara. And I would say it was placed into the Aron itself. Right? So what the Nesha Chacham is basically addressing is Moshe tells the Levium to take the Sefer Torah and put it there. Who gave Moshe the right to make such an order of the Levium? When did I, you know, I'm not sure about, okay, it's Gadol Mikol Alba, but, you know, to start putting things into the Ara, next to the Ara, how'd you know to do that, right? Now, where does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu to place the Sefer Torah anywhere near the Ara? So says the Meshech Chachma, it's implicit in this pasuk. You know, it's back in Parshas Truma, when the making of the Aron is described, there's already a hint, depending on how you read the pasuk. All you got to do in order to read the pasuk this way is put parentheses around the beginning and middle of pasuk Chodesh. So then, essentially, the pasuk is saying, put into or next to the Aron, put there everything which I'm going to teach Klal Yisrael. In other words, put a Sefer Torah into or next to the Ara. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't make it up out of thin air. Moshe Rabbeinu was going back. He knew the Meshech Chachma, right? So he went back to this Parshat Dvarim. He went back to this Parshat Truma, and he saw that that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant, that the Sefer Torah ultimately is supposed to be placed there. Okay, that's in terms of the Ara. It's a very beautiful, short, beautiful thought. The next one, Kuf Lamed Gimel, just the left-hand side of the page. Menisa Vames HaShulchan. In Perek Chafei, Pasuk Chafkes, it's describing the making of the Shulchan, and it's the table. And it says, V'yosisa es ha-bazim asei shitin, the Shulchan, as we spoke about before, also had bazim, had rods, which were inserted in it. You should make the rods out of acacia wood. V'tzipisa osam zahav, you should overlay them with gold. V'nisa avamis ha-shulchan, and the shulchan should be carried through with them. Okay, interesting, right? Not necessarily remarkable. Says the Meshech Chachma, there's a very subtle change in how the pasuk expresses the role of the badim by the shulchan versus the way the role of the badim is expressed in other contexts. When you look at the mizbechos, you know, the two altars, and you look at the aron, and when it describes the badim in each case, it talks about that the role of the badim is loses, in order to carry, bisays, when it is carried, v'nisavam, right, as it says by the Shulchan, is more of a directive. You should carry the Shulchan via these badim. Why the change in terminology? Pirush, the explanation is, Shemitzvah lisoes ha-Shulchan, Avshalo l'tzarech b'yoso b'mikdosh, Aroso l'orei b'olei regalim, Re'uchi baschem l'fei ha-mokom. Chazal tell us that the Shulchan was lifted up when Klal Yisrael came to be Ole Regel, you know, to show the miracle of the lechem aponim. The lechem aponim remained fresh from Shabbos to Shabbos. So, you know, there was show and tell that went on. They lifted up the shulchan to show it to the olei regalim, to the people who came up. Ruuchi batchem lefnei amakom. Look at how much the Ribbono Shel Olam loves you. He performs this miracle of keeping the lechem aponim fresh from Shabbos to Shabbos. So in other words, as opposed to the other kelim, where, you know, if you need to carry it, so carry it, right? But there's no inyan to pick up these items when they are stationary, the mizbechos and the arav, when they are stationary, you just leave them be, right? You don't have to pick them up at that point. In contrast, the shulchan was picked up even, you know, when it was stationary in the mikdash. The nisavam is the shulchan. You, davka, should pick up the shulchan in order to display the miracle to Klal Yisrael. Mishum hachi, bohavik kli ha'osay lenachas. That's why the Gemara Chagiga describes, in terms of the laws of Hilchos with Tumah V'Tahara, there's a concept of a kli which is made to stay stationary. The Shulchan is explicitly not called a kli which is meant to stay stationary, because it wasn't. It was part of the usage of the Shulchan was to pick it up three times a year and to use it to demonstrate the miracle of the Lechem Aponim to those people who came out to the Olei Regel, right? So again, you know, it's a classic example of the Meshech Chachma seeing the Makar, seeing the source for a practice which is just described in Chazal and not really given any Makar. There's no source for that idea. You know, you just think, okay, you know, they figured it was a nice thing to do. No, they didn't figure it was a nice thing to do. They saw in Chumash that it was, I don't know, a nice thing to do, a recommended thing to do. According to the way the Meshech Chachma reads the pasuk, the Ribbono Shel Olam, when the Shulchan was built, far before they were Olei Regalim, right? You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam is already saying that v'nisavam es ha-shulchan, you should davka. There's certain times where the Shulchan is supposed to be carried in order to demonstrate the miracle of the lechem aponim to people. Well, because the lechem aponim had this miracle of the freshness associated with it. Right. So, what else would you? I would say for the following two things. I mean, first of all, the lechem aponim is 12 lechem aponim, so there's a certain symbolism of Klal Yisrael. So the freshness of the lechem aponim really, you know, perhaps symbolically speaks to a certain freshness of Klal Yisrael. You know, that Klal Yisrael are constantly supported and kept, you know, fresh by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Beyond that, the Shulchan is a simon of time also. Right? So, I mean, let's be honest, you know, when people want to know that they're being supported financially by the Ribbono Shel Olam, the message of the freshness of the Lechem Aponim basically is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always going to take care of you in terms of your parnasa, which, you know, it's nice that you love me, you know. The son who writes his parents when he's away at college, Dad, Mom, I miss you so much, M-I-S with a thing through it, S with another thing through it, you know, I can't wait to see you with another, your loving son with a thing through the S, right? Yeah, love, for better or for worse, expresses itself in financial terms, right? So if the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, is ready to give parnasa to the Klal Yisrael, as evidenced by the Lechem Aponim, that's what it represents, that's Chivaschem Lefei Amakom, that shows the tremendous love that the Ribbono Shel Olam has for Klal Yisrael. Okay, I want to take a look on page Kuf Lamed Hey, where the Meshech Chachma, the very, very last piece in Truma, Meshech Chachma has a very, I would say, somewhat unconventional pshat, or unconventional take on a story which is familiar to many of us. Yuma Daf Lamed Hey, it's the bottom of the left-hand column on Kuf Lamed Hey. Amar Hu Krocha, Amar Lohem Atiluni Layom, Chutz Misharei Nikanor, Meshenasu Bo Nisim. Right? The Gemara in Yuma discusses the Shar Nikanor, right? The special gate in the Beis HaMikdash, which was named after an individual named Nikanor. What was the story? So the Gemara in Yuma tells a famous story that this Nikanor went to Mitzrayim to buy these beautiful copper doors for the Beis HaMikdash. And as he was coming back on the ship from Mitzrayim, you know, Egypt back then was also a place of difficulty, I guess. But at least the sea was a place of difficulty. As he was on the way back from Egypt, so there was a tremendous storm, and one of the doors blew over. They wanted to take the other door because of the storm and throw it into the sea. He refused. He grabbed onto the door. They ended up throwing him and the door together, and the doors followed them. The door which had gone overboard followed the boat all the way to Eretz Yisrael. So you see there were nisim that took place with these doors. So Mimela, that's why when they put these doors into the Beis HaMikdash, they always refer to these doors as the doors in the Sha'ar Nikanar, right, to remember Nikanar. And that's why even when they upgraded the Beis HaMikdash and changed everything, you know, from copper to gold, the copper doors of Nicanor were left intact as copper to remember the nace that had happened with them. That's one shot from the Gemara in Yom. And the Gemara then says, but not everyone agrees to that. Yesh'omim neshin chushtam mitzuheves ha'yisa. Some say that the copper was actually overlaid, right? And, that's why they didn't replace it, and that's the reference to Nicanor. Nira, Hagelo Nichole Viteritz Kamro, Kita Omer Perakakones, Omer Kachmi Kublani, Vibesdin Shoshmola Ramasi, Kalamoser Asma Lamus Aldivre Torah, in Omrim Divar Halacha Bishma, Yosech Osam Hashem, the Amrinu Mishma de Gemara. The Gemara in Vavakaman Hakones quotes the following story. There's a description in Novi of the following story. David HaMelech, says the Navi, was extremely thirsty. He said, who's going to go to Beit Lechem and get me water? Three great giborim, three great heroes went and they got him water, they brought it back to him, and he didn't drink it. Alright, so the Gemara says, what's going on over here? So the Gemara says, this isn't about water, this is really about a Shailat Halacha. David HaMelech was fighting a war against the Plishtim. He had a certain Shailan Halacha, whatever it happens to be. And he said, I don't know how to answer this question. Some of his Giborim, who were not just warriors, but big Talmidei Chacham, said, okay, we'll go and ask the Sanhedrin. And to go ask the Sanhedrin meant that you had to put yourself in danger because you were going, within firing range of the enemy of the Plishtim. But they said, we don't care. We're going to go. We have to get the answer for David HaMelech. They risk life and limb. They go to the Sanhedrin. They come back with the answers. And the Gemara says David didn't drink the water, which means metaphorically that when he said over the halachic answers they had brought back, he didn't repeat them in the names of those giborim, even though under normal circumstances he would have quoted the people who brought him the halacha. Because he said, I have a tradition from Shmuel Aramasi. If a person puts himself in danger in order to receive words of Torah, that's wrong. Right? They should have said, as much as the Shiloh was a pressing one, they should have said, okay, look, a person is not obligated to risk life and limb in order to get an answer to a Shiloh that he has. Right? So, you did the wrong thing, so I'm not going to say over the halacha in your name because of the, because of that risk that you put yourself in.
Why did you stop them before they
I guess he expressed the Shiloh and they jumped the gun and then, came back. So, V'chein kan shemosar atzmo al dover zeh mipnei zeh lo hoya roi lahazkir shmo v'shelo lachlifam. That's why the second Teretz says, no, this whole story with Nicanor, that wouldn't have been really a reason to call these doors, the doors of Nicanor. Because the truth is, what Nicanor did was wrong. Now, we usually say over the story of Nicanor as something that's really praiseworthy, that look at this great thing, that he was Moser Nefesh, and he held on to the door, and he said, if the door's going to go, I'm going to go also. Right? We usually hold Nicanor up, as a hero for what he did. Says the Meshech Chachma, no. I mean, that's good for the Machlokas and the Gemara. The other opinion in the Gemara is saying that what Nicanor did was not such a great thing. Maybe it was heroic in a certain sense, But a person is not supposed to put his life in danger, even for words of Torah. And certainly for the sake of just preserving a door for the Beis HaMikdash, okay, you'll go back, you'll get another door. Right, okay, you know, you're not supposed to kill yourself over a door. So it wouldn't have been called Shaar Nikanor in recognition of his involvement. There must be some other reason why it's called Shaar Nikanor. And then he goes on to say as follows, Zeh she'omer l'kdosh m'asher ba'aretz heima, v'adirei kochav sibam. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. L'kdosh m'asher ba'aretz heima, for the holy ones who were in the land, v'adirei kochav sibam, and the strong ones, all of my desires for them. So says the Meshech Chachma, this is the pasuk David HaMelech said after this episode, where he had these shilas and, you know, these gibarim jumped the gun and ran off to the Sanhedrin to get him some answers. Pirush hakibarim asher kochevsi ani motzei bohem. These gibarim who fulfilled my wish, right? In other words, they brought me the answer to my question. Yirbo atzvosam. The pasuk goes on to say, Yirbo atzvosam acher maharu. Right? Their sadness should increase. Lama. Acher maharu leilech l'shol Sanhedrin. I'm coming back to David's question from before. Right, acher maharu. They made haste. You know, I said this thing. Gee, I wonder what the answer is to this. And all of a sudden, I turn around and they're off. You know, they ran behind enemy lines to go to the Sanhedrin. They took off. Palasich niskehem yidam. I will not pour out their libations from blood. Uval esosh mosam al svasoi. And I will not mention their names on my lips. What does it mean, I won't mention their names on my lips? So says the Meshech Chachma, it means that the Torah, which they taught me, I'm not going to say over in their names, because they did wrong by running to the Sanhedrin and putting themselves into danger as a result.
Doesn't the text say,
right, but I guess the way Chazal are interpreting that is, I'm not asking you to get it, I'm just expressing, would it be nice if I knew the answer to this question?
But when you really wanted for the answer to the question, you didn't want a glass of water.
Right, no, but in other words, I really want the answer to this question, but I'm not asking you to go out and put yourself in danger in order to bring it back to me. I'm just expressing, you know, this question is bothering me, it's on my mind, it would really be nice. I'm not asking you to do it, I'm saying it would really be nice, you know, to know the answer to this question. Right. Now, it is, you know, Chazal are taking the Pashat of Pshat and reinterpreting it in a totally homiletic fashion. For Nicanor. Yeah, so ordinarily we assume the fact that the Nes was done is a sign that God was happy. Meshech Chachma is learning that not necessarily. Okay, so, you know, look, he was a good guy. He was a tzaddik, right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped him out. But really shouldn't have been like that, you know? The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a nes doesn't necessarily mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is happy. Look, I mean, mashal ma'adav adam with parents, right? The kid does something the parent doesn't really want him to do. So the parent will bail out the kid, you know, after the fact. But it still doesn't mean that the kid should have done what he did. Right, so you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu bails out the door, you know, but you really shouldn't have done what you actually did there. So he writes, that's with regard to Talmud Torah v'Yochid, right? David HaMelech had a personal shaila, so these people should not have been most nefesh for him. I'm normal Talmud Torah the rabbi, but when it comes to Talmud Torah of the masses, Sarach Limsar Asma Lamisa. That a person, Taka, should be ready to put himself into danger. Talmud Torah of the masses is so important, it's worth putting yourself into danger. For Adarabba, Nenash Yehoshua Meshlo Asak Batar Be'ez Milchama. Gemar Megillah says that Yehoshua was punished because, you know, they did not learn Torah properly during time of war. Right? Now, I guess you might make the argument, you know, why didn't Yehoshua have them sitting and learning B'chavrusa during wartime? Because, let's be honest, you know, I mean, all the time you're investing in sitting and, you know, having chavrusas during wartime is less time that you could be preparing for the war. So, I mean, from a you know, pragmatic perspective, from a military's perspective, it's probably dangerous. That's just not a good idea. It's probably dangerous for a person to engage, you know, to have this mass okay, we're going to shut down the war preparations, you know, for a couple of hours. We're going to have a Seder and a Shir, you know, instead of, you know, going out and having target practice. Right? So the guys are not going to be such good soldiers when they go into war. Nonetheless, Yeshua is punished for the Bittul Talmud Torah D'Rabbim. In other words, Talmud Torah D'Rabbim is worth putting yourself into danger for. Moshe Rabbeinu also put himself out into danger, in a sense. He was Moser Nefesh for the Torah of Klal Yisrael. So in his case, the Torah can be called on his name. Torah Zivolano Moshe, Marosha Kihilas Yaakov. There is this concept. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu was not held accountable in any way. You know, even though he was, you know, being Moser Nefesh, not eating and drinking for 40 days and nights, you know, certainly he's Mesiris Nefesh. Nonetheless, that's not held against him because it's considered to be an idea of Talmud Torah D'Rabbim, right? So, here in this parasha, again, the Meshech Chachma has found allusions, kedarko, to things that are much later on in Chazal, you know, that are hinted already in the Pesukim. He's given us some interesting insights, hashkafically, into the, you know, certain aspects of the Aron and the Shulchan in particular. And this last very interesting shot that he has, you know, that the story of Nicanor, which is usually considered to be, you know, a praise of Nicanor, may not actually be so wonderful. Very interesting, you know, two Gemaras that he puts together is, you know, something worth thinking over. Okay, we'll see you Be'ez Hashem next week with Parshas Ketubot.